Hello and welcome everyone to the Destiny Unveiled Holy Nights Visioning Conversations. This is our last conversation before we cross the threshold to the new year. Thanks for joining us, whether you're on the line live with us tonight or listening in when it works for you. I'm Viviana Sinclair, and I'm here with my partner, Elia Rael. Elia, would you say hello, and would you be willing to share about the significance of the date of our call today?
Sure. Well, hello, everyone. This is actually the 103rd anniversary of the original founding of the Anthroposophical Society that took place on December 28th, 1912. Now, at that time, in the movement itself, Rudolf Steiner himself was not a member. It was a group of people that formed the society, and they actually took title to the land that later the Gertianum was built upon. So we're going to do a little sharing together about the form that I just shared with you that the society originally took, and then the new form that was brought to us by Rudolf Steiner with the Christmas conference. We're going to contrast the two of them later.
Yeah, and we'll explore why that new form was needed at the time and how it can serve us now as a template for us in our initiatives and in our communities, because there's something really innovative there that hadn't been done yet in history that Rudolf Steiner inaugurated that can educate us as to how to follow in his path. So also we'll explore tonight, we're going to explore the path of development from the birth of the spirit child at Christmas to the maturation of spirit self as we approach the threshold to the new year. So there's this maturation process that takes place. And if we follow Rudolf Steiner's lead, we can imagine that we have the possibility to face the lower guardian on New Year's Eve and the greater guardian on New Year's Day. We'll explore how the Foundation Stone Meditation can introduce us to Anthroposophia, who can become our guide across the threshold, and then we'll explore further what a new Christ Festival Day celebration would look like on January 1st. So we want to cover quite a bit tonight. And after Elia and I share some leading thoughts around these themes, we'll open the lines to hear any questions, reflections, or comments from those of you who are with us live tonight. And we also would encourage you, if at any point along the way you're moved and you want to speak up or you have something to share, just press *6 on your telephone keypad and say yes, you have a question, even if it's not a question but a reflection or something, and then we can open your line, and please feel free to join the conversation as we go along. Steiner's calendar of the soul verses give us an imagination we can begin to build on in the conversation, and we've been following these verses for the last several weeks. So, Elia, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share just the last three verses that form a whole for the soul mood that we experience right now.
Yes, of course. Well, the verses come in a triptych, or that at least we've uncovered that's how they work. There's like a 1, 2, 3, a 1, 2, 3. So I'll share the last two verses, and then we'll the verse for actually this week. So he said. So here's verse 37. We had shared this 2 weeks back. To bear the light of spirit into the winter night of worlds, my questing heart in joy aspires, that soul seeds luminous may root in the world's deep ground, and the word of the Creator in senses darkness resounds, transfiguring all existence. And then verse 38, the Christmas verse. I feel the spirit child, set free from spell in womb of soul. The holy word of worlds has in the heart's clear light begotten heaven's own fruit of hope, which joyfully grows toward farthest worlds out of my being's godly ground. And then verse 39. Yielding to the Spirit's revelation, I gain the light of Spirit essence. The strength of thinking grows strong in clarity to give myself to me. Springing from the thinker's might, a wakeful sense of self emerges.
Thank you, Elijah. What's come alive for me this year and what I'd like to open the conversation with is a deeper understanding of the artistic image that we chose to accompany the verses that were just read. We created a version of the calendar of the soul that had artistic graphics above each of the verses so that you could identify which soul moods, which verses went together that form this threefold triptych. And then on this particular, from Christmas, from the solstice, actually, the solstice verse, the Christmas verse, and then this week's verse, they form a whole. And on that image, if you have the verse in front of you, that I sent out a link for the verse that for tonight earlier today when I sent an email out with the call-in information. You don't need to look at it, but if you want to look at it later, you can. On the verse, we chose an image of the book from the book of Revelation with a woman standing with the sun in her heart, the moon at her feet, and crowned with 12 stars. In John's revelation, she is about to give birth to a child, and the dragon lingers at her feet, anticipating the possibility to devour the child. Saint Laya, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share what that image signifies for you.
Well, I would love to do that. Before, though, I would really like to read right out of the Apocalypse of St. John, because it's so potent. But I'm going to give you a little background first that Steiner has shared with us, that starting in the year 1841 and ending in November of 1879, that Michael had went to do battle with the Ahrimonic spirits. And what he basically did was cast down these Ahrimonic spirits into the subconscious soul of human beings. So I want to segue from that into the reading out of the Gospels, and then I want to give you a little bit of what I think the background image kind of invokes in us, or at least in me. And an exalted sign was unveiled in the world of spirit. A woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, her head adorned with the crown of the 12 stars. And she was with child and cried out in the labor and pain of giving birth. And a second image was revealed in the heavens. See, a great fiery red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns. On his heads he had 7 diadems. And with his tail he drew down a third of all the stars in heaven and threw them on the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that he could devour her child when it was born. And the woman gave birth to a child, a son. He shall shepherd all peoples with an iron staff. And the woman's child was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the desert. It was in the divine world plan that she must go there. There she is to eke out her existence for 1,260 days. And a war flared up in the heavenly world. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought in the midst of his angels, but his strength failed. and so there was no longer a place for them in the heavens. The great dragon was overthrown. The primeval serpent, who is both diabolic and satanic in nature, the tempter of all humankind, onto the earth he was thrown, and all his angels with him, and I heard a great voice in heaven. Now has been founded the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God, the creative might of his Christ. So imagine, here's 1879, Rudolf Steiner is crossing over his first moon node, 18.3. And up above, this war has concluded. But if we take that image of the woman with the 12 stars and the sun in her center and the moon on her feet, that I really believe that this is a picture of what we would call the, you could say the Queen of Heaven, but you could really say in anthroposophical terminology, the Sophia, meaning the this divine being as a goddess that Michael serves. But you can also think of the child, this child that's born to this divine Sophia, also as a child that's come down into the world that certainly could be Rudolf Steiner, who is now going to share out in his life what he's learned, you know, in the spiritual world. So that's just kind of a short look at what that being could be. I think we could say more a little bit later also.
Yeah, for me, this year, it's really come to have a new significance, and part of it grew out of our conversations last week about some of the topics that were brought up, which I'll come back to in a minute. But in anthroposophical medicine, the moon is related to silver and in the body to the brain and the reproductive organs. And if we follow the path outlined in Steiner's book, Knowledge of Higher Worlds, and which is also articulated from a little bit different perspective in the handouts I sent out on developing initiation consciousness and the karmic exercises, they were also in the email earlier, we can see Rudolf Steiner begins the exercises with attention in the upper chakras, since they are the easiest to grasp with our consciousness, and then he moves through each one, descending through to the lower chakras, which require an ever deeper attentiveness. And when the lower chakras are activated in with this new consciousness out of the exercises that he's given, it's not just, he said they're already spinning partially, but we need to actively work with them to get them, to get the other half spinning, and that's what gives us the possibility for new organs of perception. So when these lower chakras are activated, and a purification takes place, a reversal happens and a release occurs, which begins to create a harmonious movement in the etheric body, which is intimately connected to the organ of the heart, and the heart regulates. So the heart begins to be an organ that can regulate that which we're perceiving from the upper chakras and the lower chakras. And when the etheric body begins to move, it activates our perception from the perspective of the etheric heart, and we can begin then to perceive our individual karma and our karma with others. So for me, this woman is such a picture of ourselves in a way, and our own soul, and anthroposophia that Rudolf Steiner, like Elia kind of alluded to, he was the first one to really give birth to this being, anthroposophia. And what I realized this year is that distinction between the suppression of the lower chakras, which I think I've tended to do a little too much in my life, and the activation and purification through the exercises described by Rudolf Steiner. And when we allow that procreative energy to flow in a purified way that is tempered by the heart, it can also begin to nurture the brain, which regulates the whole hormonal system, which is intimately related to our souls. And Elia, last week you had shared some details around this theme that kind of, that's what sort of inspired me to take these thoughts a little deeper, and I appreciate you reading that gospel account of this woman. It's very powerful, but I'm wondering if you could maybe recap or take what you had shared last week a little further.
Yeah, well, last week, and maybe even one of the other calls, I was sharing out of some of the lectures, the content of the lectures in world history in the light of anthroposophy, because in that, when that legend is taking place, the Gilgamesh legend 3000 BC, it's a temple priestess that brings Iabani into the temple. And it's hard, I think, for us in the 20th century to understand what might have taken place. It's not talked about openly very much anywhere, but I'm pretty sure that has a lot to do with drawing Iabani into the senses. And a connection, of course, with the future transformation of the sexual organs into the larynx so that the possibility occurs through the developed power of the spoken word to bring human bodies into incarnation. And that relates to something Rudolf Steiner shared with us, that the women are becoming sterile. And if we look at, again, the three archetypal figures that are there in the Christmas conference, Rudolf Steiner as presenter, but then Marie Steiner really holding this heart center, and Ida Begman really heading up the medical section and really being a representative of the will. And I had shared that I really believe that what's coming more and more into a focus is that the three of them together represent these huge tasks in their own destiny. You know, to Rudolf Steiner to spiritualize thinking, Marie Steiner to spiritualize her feeling life, and then, of course, Ida Begman to spiritualize her will. But I think the destiny task from within the Christmas conference was the ability to work together. That Rudolf Steiner was making a great attempt in recounting the story to awaken something of acceptance in the soul of Marie Steiner. And so that's still an unanswered question in regards to a lot of the anthroposophists, because we know that from 1925, after Rudolf Steiner died, in those next 10 years, there were incredible differences of opinion of where one should go within the society. So that's what I'd like to share about it for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, we can see that in those exercises that he was giving prior to that, and what he was working out of with the Foundation Stone Meditation, he begins with the will, thou livest in the limbs, which bear thee through the realm of space into the ocean being of the spirit with the Foundation Stone Meditation. So this reversal, he was working out of this new heart perception, and he was bearing his karma with these two women. And what he pleaded for in the exercises was a purification and a letting the personal go. And it just, was very, you know, he was really saying how important it is to overcome this egoism that, and to be able to work together from different perspectives. So I just see this opportunity every Christmas as a possibility to come back when, if we look at this imagination of birthing this spirit child, and if our hearts go out to the Jesus child, the twin soul of the first Adam soul who stayed back in the spiritual world, it's like the rest of us incarnated and the rest of humanity incarnated, but this soul of Jesus was held back in this purified form. And it's just been my experience that a purity, possibility, and expectancy can be felt more palpably at Christmas than at any other time of the year. And the word innocence really comes to me. It's like I believe this time is really a time to purify our own desires, and we're given strength to be able to do so in such a way that we can begin to return to the innocence that we can and form a new relationship to the spirit child within us that remembers what it was like to be in the purified whole state before the fall into matter. And so just to recap our soul journey over the last few weeks, we first heard an invitation in the verses to surrender, and as we surrendered, we became open to become a vessel for the word, which resounds in the senses' darkness, transfiguring all of life. So this word works within us and about us, and we, with our consciousness, can navigate both inner and outer. And so out of this purified transfiguration, a birth occurs out of our soul being. It's the only time of year that this birth occurs. There's a communion at Easter time and a conception at St. John's Tide, and then a maturation at Michaelmas, and then there's this descent into the will and this birthing process that happens at Christmastide. And then there is from then on, in January, the only time when love is really used in the calendar of the soul verses is after this birth occurs between Christmas and Easter. There's this enrichment of the heart and the heart perception, and it just really, there's an opportunity now that is so unique. And Rudolf Steiner said many times that the Christmas conference wasn't something that was to be held as an event of the past, but that it's ongoing. And so this continuous birthing of Anthroposophia and us maturing our relationship to her, I think is just such an important concept every year, that we hold this context for these spiritual events that can be very real for us. So, and I personally don't believe it's coincidence, I probably have said this before, that both the original founding of the Anthroposophical Society, which we're celebrating as a, where we're just acknowledging it tonight, that original founding happened during the Holy Nights of Christmas, and then the refounding happened during the Holy Nights of Christmas from December 24th to January 1st. And I just really believe this is an optimal time right now for birthing and visioning our own initiatives and becoming a person who's working out of a wholehearted will in the world on behalf of humanity. First, you know, finding our own relationship to the spiritual world, and then and what it is that we came here to do, and then sharing that with one another and those we feel belong to our destiny community. So, Elia, I think this might be a good time to just turn to the form, maybe the form of the original society and then the form that the Christmas conference took, because we've just described a path of individual development, but the Christmas conference really formed a vessel, a social vessel for the being Anthroposophia. And how does it differ from what came before, and what's happened afterwards? What do we have now as the current form, and how can this Christmas conference serve as a template and guide for us in our own initiatives and our communities?
Well, what Rudolf Steiner was doing, if we first look back at the original society, basically the real, you had the legal form, or let's say you had a society, and it had its membership, etc. But in regards to property and ownership, it really had alongside of it, or actually within it, the Gertianum Association, which was the legal holder of the property. And then with the burning of the Gertianum as a symbol, in a certain sense, of the crisis within the society, Steiner really was asking the question that whole year long, 1923, of could the mystery be refounded? He had gotten that question from Ida Wegman, and so he was living with what form a society could take if he himself were to join it, because an initiate previously had never belonged or joined an earthly institution. So what he created during the day workings through the Holy Nights of 1923 up to January 1st were the principles and, so to speak, the bylaws and how, you know, that society would operate. And one of the main features was there was no voting rights. He said, well, he himself was saying, well, what's there to vote on? There's nothing to vote on. And it was imperative that he be the leader or take the position of president of that society. And at the time, he also was the leader of, or the soon-to-be inaugurated College of Spiritual Science. And the Gertianum itself had all, I mean, the Gertianum Association was still a legal entity, but he creates a brand new entity, and if you can kind of think of it as drawing two circles on a piece of paper, one on the left, one on the right, and with the Gertianum Association, it still held title to the land and to the Gertianum, which was very valuable, and it had voting rights, and it had a limited amount of members. The original society had unlimited membership. And the name he gave it, which I think is mistranslated, but I'll give you a new translation. I think it should be called the Universal Anthroposophical Society. And he placed a foundation stone in the second society into the hearts of the members. So he's creating a new temple for humanity. And the foundation stone is not down into the ground 13 steps, which had occurred with the first Gertianum, which was still there in the burnt grounds of the first Gertianum when the Christmas conference took place. He placed that foundation stone into the hearts of the members. So he's creating a temple for humanity. And at the time, there's nothing even physically there, but the Gertianum itself spiritually is still there. So given this new form that he created, and then in the evening with the lectures on world history, he's really asking us to really deepen our relationship to thinking, feeling, and willing. I mean, we can hear it expressed just in the panels of the Foundation Stone Meditation. And it starts, look at how it just starts. O human soul, thou livest in the limbs which bear thee through the world of space, into ocean being of the spirit. Practice spirit remembrance. Well, there's the will element, and then he calls on the first hierarchy, the seraphim, the cherubim, and the thrones. And then in a different panel, O human soul, thou livest in the beat of heart and lung, which leads thee through the rhythmic tides of time into the essential feeling of thy own soul being. Practice spirit awakening. And then a third panel, O human soul, thou livest in the resting head, which from the ground of the eternal opens to thee the thoughts of worlds. Practice spirit vision. So all that took place when the Christmas conference was Rudolf Steiner leading the 800 members across the threshold. It's as if, and this is the recounting of many of the people that experienced it, was as if everything came out of the spiritual world, that Rudolf Steiner created this atmosphere that was just saturated with spirit. And we know ourselves that all three of these elements really need a lot of work. But imagine if you're presented there, he really wanted us to wake up in our thinking, in our feeling, in our willing, and find our destiny task where we could, with others, not alone, but with others, unite our destiny with others, and then have one's individual destiny become the destiny of the times. But what occurred within a year and a half was that the group within the Gertianum Association decided to, they had an extraordinary meeting, an AGM, and they renamed themselves General Anthroposophical Society. So the legal entity, General Anthroposophical Society, was never recorded with the authorities. And I don't think it was necessarily meant to. But it was certainly not meant to become the Gertianum Association was not meant to become the Universal Anthroposophical Society. And so we do have the tragic events leading up to the 1935 annual general meeting, where voting was allowed at an annual general meeting, and Ida Begman and Elizabeth Vreda and others, Walter Johannes Stein, the entire Dutch society, and the British society were expelled from the Universal Anthroposophical Society. And it's still something we should always carry in our hearts during the Holy Nights, because the Christmas conference itself is a future event. It's unfinished, meaning that we can still participate in what it becomes. And that's the real core, the golden message that's in the Foundation Stone Meditation.
Thank you. I'd just like to bring up something that Arthur Edwards brought up in the Money Unveiled course. And we've also seen this in Christopher Houghton's Bud's book, The Right on Corporation, where they're really talking about initiative as a path of initiation, and how the form that we choose, the form is so important. And I think right now it's even more important, because this last Advent was the first of the cosmic events of Neptune squaring Saturn, which for me, that's a picture of the ideal, having this tension with the real and the form and the structure. What is going to be the structure and the form to hold our ideals? And I'm really grateful that we're having this call right now during this, the first Saturn-Neptune square happened during Advent, and there's going to be two more in the upcoming year. So this next year is a time to really look at form and giving the form the appropriate love and attention to be able to hold the ideals that we carry and to be able to allow us to serve in the world. And Arthur brought forth this imagination of the entrepreneur as someone who, yes, you have an ideal, maybe you have an initiative that you want to initiate in the world, but is it really your task? Like Rudolf Steiner did not fund, he lived so simply, and yet he created such wealth around him because he was able to share what he wanted to do and enroll other people in supporting him. And I think, you know, that it's such an example that, you know, he simplified his life and yet expanded possibility for everyone around him in a community setting. And then bringing this form of the Christmas conference forward, the members funded it, and he said we had to keep one hand in the spiritual world and the other hand, that nothing would happen unless we kept another hand on our wallet and in finances. And he talked about the budget and what was needed and even what would be needed financially for things to happen in a faster timeline if so much capital was available. And constantly he was creating, you know, before this he was continuously supporting businesses and enterprises and corporations even. And today I think we can take this template of the Christmas conference and look, okay, there's the entrepreneur who has the vision. Then there is this possibility to really stand for oneself and say, you know, here's my initiative. Where is my community? Who is my community? How can I create a form in such a way that I can choose the people that I would like to have helped me hold the spiritual intentions for what I'm trying to do, which Rudolf Steiner did with the School of Spiritual Science and the Vorstand that he created, and then who is going to be doing the hands-on work with me, and who will be doing the financing, and who will own it. The ownership can be totally separate and divorced from the initiative. So, for example, in our program, Money Unveiled, the biodynamic farmer who has this knowing that it's his destiny to do this farming may not be actually the one that does the financing of the farm and the equipment and such, but that has a contract of association with the community that wants to support him. And so this, I mean, we can only barely scratch the surface tonight because this is just like one piece of it, but of this picture that we're bringing forward. But I think it's important to keep in mind, and this separation, this threefold separation that occurred at the Christmas conference, it's really a threefold dynamic that can be applied like an archetype, like a template to other initiatives. And if our initiative, our destiny initiative, is the most sacred thing that we can be doing in our lifetime, then I think it just behooves us to begin to understand like these form questions more thoroughly, and to see how the financing, the management, and the spiritual intention, or as Arthur called it, the ethos of a company or an initiative can be held by different groups of people. And when we begin to entertain these thoughts and possibilities, then we have a listening, you know, if there's excess capital in our lives, if money is the veil of karma, do we have karma with those in our community? Are we able to see with the power of our etheric heart the karmic relationships and what is being asked of us? Can we, you know, can we simplify our lives in such a way but yet create more wealth around us? And how do we do that? How do we, you know, how do we do that? That's a little bit of what we're exploring in Money Unveiled. But I think it's so important here, especially as we're crossing the threshold to the new year. So maybe we could talk a little bit about the, well, Eli, do you have anything else you'd like to share about what I just said?
Well, I tell you, I was enraptured listening. You were transporting me back to 1923, and I'm thinking, wow, there's 799 other people in this room. And here's, and it's like I'm living in these imaginations that you're creating, which, if we take them to heart and actually could implement them, would lead to a culture of initiation. But I think we should spend a little time, which is still, we have a few minutes before, let's say, we turn the mics on. But if we could share about what's coming toward us yet,
yeah,
which is the Christ Festival Day. And what would that look like? What does that look like? I mean, I've thought about it for years, and I come closer to it when I always feel or live with the imagination that Anthroposophia is born out at the Christmas conference as a divine human being amongst us. And that Rudolf Steiner is saying to us that we shouldn't do anything in our life that we can't consult with Anthroposophia about. And the real message for me, too, is within the Christmas conference itself, that it should be that we draw from what we do from the spiritual down right into the physical. So I guess it's up to a group of individuals like ourselves to at some point have an open dialogue about what that would look like. Because I don't have a formulated concrete picture that I'd say, well, you know, here's the workbook. You meet at 1 o'clock and, you know, you have a bouquet of lilies and you have a bouquet of roses and you have a cluster of grapes and you have a cluster of wheat and, you know, but it's something along those lines. And it's individuals that would meet and I guess share out of their feelings what they've been experiencing during the holy nights, and especially in contemplating the imaginations that we're trying to share, that it was a great sacrifice for Rudolf Steiner to openly share his karma with the room, because it cost him his life. I mean, on January 1st, he was poisoned. They burnt the Goethe on him, his work, the year previous. A year later, on January 1st, they destroy his work, and he's still alive, and now they want to destroy his body. And it just shows us, you know, the depth of what he was up to, the fear that the opponents had, the Jesuits and the Masons, of what he was sharing openly. But the victory is ours, and I think that's what the Christ Festival Day is about. It's about, you know, contemplations of what's in the leading thoughts.
Well, also, I mean, if we look at in karmic relationships, he talks about the study being old karma, moon karma, and initiative being sun karma. And the Christ impulse for me is, and the Christ initiative is love. And I believe that that is something we're all here to learn. And can we really love when other people are suffering, and they are often suffering and not able to, how many people don't fulfill their destiny tasks due to financial constraints or obligations or responsibilities that they're, because we've been so programmed to think that we're isolated and separate from one another. And I believe this Christ Festival Day, for me, it's a picture of entering the Sun Temple together with our initiatives and every the beauty of it, and the reason why I don't think there can be ever a prescription or, you know, do this, this, and this, is because everyone has to be free to work with who they feel called to work with, and to have the, you know, the inspiration to call their community into being with one another. And I can imagine having different kinds of, so it becomes more of a dynamic process. I can imagine having different kinds of conversations and different kinds of meetings. I'm doing it myself with different people that I'm engaged with that have a different aspect of the destiny imagination that I have for myself. And so the main thing that I really want to bring forward is we have just a couple more days until New Year's Eve. And what does that look like to meet the lower guardian and the greater guardian if the greater guardian holds the is at the door to the Sun Temple and the lower guardian shows us all of our frailties and weaknesses? You know, for me, it's just, it's a matter of intuiting to the best that we can as we prepare for crossing the threshold on New Year's Eve, that we have this imagination as clearly articulated and as concrete as we can, that we're describing first to ourselves and then with other people that we might intuit or feel inspired that they can, you know, contribute or have something to do with it in some way, that we hold this picture and that we also are willing to admit and to look at our shortcomings, our failings, our, you know, our weaknesses, that which we might need help with, and to offer in humility and with a feeling of, you know, almost like surrender, that we offer that up on New Year's Eve, and we offer it to the higher spiritual hierarchies that are named in the Foundation Stone Meditation, so that we are not feeling like we have to carry it ourselves, that we can be helped, that spiritual help will come to us if we offer this vision in humility. And for me, the Christ Festival Day is a day when we're all, like, we've closed our books on the 31st, and we're looking to see what our karma is. It's like, how can we serve, and how can we begin to build new community? How can we find each other in the Sun Temple? How can we perceive out of this etheric heart forces the destiny and the karma of ourselves and of those that we see in our community, and how can we support each other in that way? And I think it's going to look different for every single person, which is a beautiful thing.
Well, that was wonderful, Viviana. I certainly want to enter into that sun temple. But I'd say this, that on January 1st, in the last lecture, the right entry into the spiritual world, Rudolf Steiner shares something that's quite incredible. And he says that when the modern-day human being, or let's put it this way, he says, when one observes human beings crossing the threshold and approaching the greater guardian, that the guardian says to them that they cannot pass. And he says the reason why they cannot pass is what they contain in their thought life, in the realm of ideation, is scientific abstract concepts. And he says if they cross the threshold with those concepts, abstract concepts, he says what happens is because the thinking, feeling, and willing go in separate directions, were they to cross and then come back again, that they would come back in a paralyzed state. And we know in the West that we have this onslaught going on everywhere in our culture that wants to inculcate into us these abstract scientific concepts. And it's going to produce, he says, if it isn't turned around, a group of human beings that in the near future, he says, will incarnate, but they won't be able to really have ideas in their thought life. It's actually somewhat scary what he's saying. And so in a sense, he's saying to the members that they have begun to awake. Why? Because they are able to hear things right out of the spiritual. That during the Christmas conference, he was already on the other side of the threshold with them. That they were already, that a part of their spirit self was already listening and awake. But I want to read you something that's from, it's a quote, it's out of the Easter lectures, which were months after the Christmas conference. He says, then he drew their attention to the spiritual nature of present-day mystery matters. Quote, it is indeed the case that when the spiritual impulse which has gone forth from here, from the Gertianum through the Christmas conference, really finds its way into the life of the Anthroposophical Society by bringing about an ever greater depth of understanding, then this Anthroposophical Society will provide the foundation for the mysteries of the future. The future life of the mysteries must consciously be cultivated by this Anthroposophical Society. For this Anthroposophical Society has ever before it an event, meaning the burning of the Gertianum, which can be turned to good account in future evolution, even as a similar event, meaning the burning of the Temple of Diana in Ephesus, was turned to good account once upon a time, namely the burning of the Temple of Ephesus. Then and now a great and deep wrong was done. Yet on the different planes of life, these things appear in different ways, and it lies in the freedom of humankind to turn to good account something that on one plane is a dreadful wrong. For it is just through these terrible events that a real progress of humankind can be achieved. Now that's monumental. So he turned around not only just the burning, but even the poisoning. Already here he's forgiven those that poisoned him. So I think with that, dear, maybe we can just open it up to some Q&A because we've shared quite a bit here.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you have anything, I would personally like to hear how this is landing for you and if it makes sense and if it's something that you feel inspired to explore for yourself and and just what kind of, just kind of what your response is. If you'd be willing to share, that would be wonderful. So to open your line again, it's the same star six on your telephone keypad. There's nobody, if you raised your hand before or if you pressed star six before, you got into the queue, and nobody is in there right now, so you'll have to do it again to come into the queue, and we'd really appreciate hearing any kind of reflections that you might want to share. So go ahead. There's somebody in there, I believe.
Sorry, is that for me, Vivian?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, there's a bit of a cutout there, so I wasn't sure if it was me that you were responding to. But yes, how is it landing for me? In my emails with Elia, I had described how I'm in the Anthroposophic Psychology Program, and we started about a year and a half ago in Sacramento, Rudolf Steiner College, and we were running a vigorous study group every week, and then all of a sudden things stopped. But your description of that day coming up has inspired me to that's the stage that we're at. We need to now start to share our initiatives and how do we work with this together. So it's been very powerful for me, and I would like to know if I could even share the recording with that group of 20 or so people when it is posted.
Great. Well, what I would really appreciate so much, if you find it valuable, is if you would send them the link to the page where they can sign up to receive the calls and the recordings, and that way you can let them know. They'll get a link and they'll be able to access all of them, but you can point out, you know, which one that you would see, and then there'll also be the verses there and everything else. So that would be wonderful if you would be willing to do that, and I can help you with that if you need help. I'd be willing to help you draft it so that the link is correct and it actually connects to the page and that kind of thing. So,
oh, well, thank you so much. That's excellent. Excellent.
Great.
Victoria, before you go, are you still there?
Oh, do you mean me, Kathleen?
Oh, Kathleen, I'm sorry. I thought you were Victoria.
Okay.
I apologize.
Did I call you Victoria, too?
No, you didn't.
Right, okay.
Kathleen Thompson.
Yes,
right?
Thank you. Yes.
So I'm curious about what is living within you. Kind of, could you say more about what prompted you to want to share the call with them?
Your invitation, your description of the Christ Festival coming forthcoming,
uh-huh.
and how that it's, you know, we need to start to share what our initiatives are and
right.
enter that temple together. And, you know, support each other's work that way. And that's kind of, that's the crossroads that we've been at. It's not just about the individual topics and all of that that we've been studying and how to do research and presentations on those. It's more about now what's living in our hearts and how do we want to take this work out into the world, especially in North America.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, Kathleen, an archetype is in place for you. Within, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the mystery dramas. Are
mm-hmm.
you familiar at all with the mystery dramas?
Yes, somewhat.
Yeah, well, there was the group of students around Benedictus who wanted to actually had an initiative, and they were going to work together with the Rosicrucian Brotherhood. And at the core of it, there was an individual that was in the Rosicrucian Brotherhood that owned a manufacturing company. They produced wood
mm-hmm.
products. And the initiative was to convert the entire factory into building anthroposophical toys, wooden toys.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I would encourage you to take a look again at the mystery dramas, because Lucifer and Ahriman, of course, show up, and they want to thwart the initiative.
Yes.
Along with it, Strotter built a perpetual motion machine that they certainly don't want to have operating on the plane of history. So, I just wanted to throw something out there for you that would be a good follow-up for you.
Yes,
yeah,
thank you.
I'd just like to add, I mean, I don't know what you have as an imagination, Kathleen, but I think it would be important that everyone works individually with their initiative, with their imagination of their individual initiative, and then see how to associate with your colleagues, if that makes sense. Because
yes, it does, because we're kind of we're poised at that moment. So yes,
Sense. Oh, good. Okay. Well, thanks for the question. Great question. All right. Do you have anything else to say, Kathleen, in regards to what Elijah just shared about the mystery dramas, or anything else?
No, you've given me some more food for thought, some more. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, feel free to connect with me if you need help with that email. Okay.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much, Viviana.
Right. Thank you. Okay.
Go ahead.
I didn't have a question, but I think that Elijah asked me to just explain what was happening when I was listening to something he was saying, and in the past I had somebody had given me some article on each segment. And I found her to be a very strong anthroposophist, and I admired her. And there just seemed to be, I was drawn to that. And then, and I know at the time when I first entered anthroposophy in 2000, or I went to a general meeting in Pittsburgh, and there was 300 anthroposophists, and I'm new to this. And somebody brought up what was going over in Europe, and this confrontation started happening. And I remember, and this discussions back and forth of how people were feeling, and I remember thinking, oh, listen to all these people. They have this wisdom, and yet they're thinking, and yet they're being able to communicate to each other. And that was what was happening in my mind watching this go on, and I didn't even understand everything yet. And I was given this opportunity by my branch to help open me and help me to understand it. And then later on, I began to read Marie Steiner and also her own biography, and I listened to so much on Rudolf Steiner, and then I thought, because she had the name Marie Steiner and they were married, I never really looked at so much of her, and then read a biography on her and realized all that was inside of her in her thinking and feeling life. And yet I felt this tension between Edith Eggman and Rudolf Steiner on my own through these just reading and listening into different groups sharing with my branch and others. And then last week when I listened to Elijah Rao speak about Edith Eggman and Rudolf or Marie Steiner, and that in that lecture, oh, I hope I don't mess this up, you were saying that there was something when he was giving there that just, and you mentioned again to this evening when you were giving the picture again, that someone, when Rudolf Steiner was giving the lecture, there was something there that was holding it back, or that needed to be worked out. And And that's when it, you know, it just made me think in my mind about unconditional love. And the fact, when I read in Ida Wegman, when somebody asked her, when she was being asked to leave the society, and all that tension and turmoil is gone, and I heard it living in people still in this up until now, and didn't fully understand it, and yet she sacrificed herself and said, when someone asked her why she didn't fight it, she said, because it's necessary for me to pull back and work in other directions and still move forward. And just Elia brought that picture for me to where it all made sense, these two powerful people and our egos, how they sometimes keep us, they hold us back. But I don't know if that's going to make sense to anybody else.
This must be Victoria. You didn't say your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Victoria Shahady.
All right.
And I found them to be, you know, and then I had also read, and he just reiterated it in his talk, that they always incarnated together. So when you're just trying to weave these threads together and really trying to understand what's going on, and it's really remarkable how, and doing the exercises and working, that the spiritual world is, especially tonight, since they're waiting and listening, they're wanting to help us, but they need us there speaking. They need us there asking. And I just found that it just, imaginations and pictures do come. It's happened to me working with biodynamics that I've been working with over the years.
Yeah, well, see, Victoria, I mean, I could go into a whole, we could spend, not necessarily now, but a lot of time on the background. I'll share a little bit with you, and I think the other listeners would appreciate this. In those lectures in the evenings of the Christmas conference, when Rudolf Steiner is retelling the legend of Gilgamesh, Marie Steiner is in the audience, and so is Ida Wegman. And he drives the point home that they arouse the ire of the goddess Ishtar. That goddess being works behind Marie Steiner. And then he goes on to great length to clarify for us that when she sent the bull of heaven to kill Iabani, or to battle with Gilgamesh and Iabani, there were also all kinds of other things that took place in the city of Uruk. There were diseases, there were animal astralities, et cetera, et cetera. And it caused the death of Iabani. And he went to great lengths to show the background of Iabani and the background of Gilgamesh and this whole background of world history. And Gilgamesh is one of the first individuals to start to have his own individual thoughts. And one of the thoughts he contemplated after Iabani died was the immortality of the soul. But what Rudolf Steiner is sharing with us is that the impulses that worked right into the will of Gilgamesh was inspiration from Iabani. And one of these is to travel west. And he travels to this colony of the Hibernian Mysteries. And over, Rudolf Steiner is telling us how Iabani works into the soul of Gilgamesh. Now it's 1925. Ida Wegman is at the bed of the dying Rudolf Steiner. They can look up, and there's the group statue. She is like the woman holding the dead knight Sheonatalander, Rudolf Steiner, in her arms. She is ever present with him. She is his spiritual midwife. She has already received his own Rose Cross from Rudolf Steiner. He has already privately appointed her the co-leader of the class. Well, then he dies. And Marie Steiner goes into a rage because she felt she wasn't notified early enough that Rudolf Steiner was dying. And already there was a fight over the urns, the urn of Rudolf Steiner's ashes. So you have a recapitulation of the Gilgamesh saga in the present, in the life of these three individuals. But Ida Wegman was the one that, on the night of the fire, dedicated her will and her entire being. You can't imagine how powerful that was for Rudolf Steiner until you read the love poems, the esoteric poems he wrote to her. He now could move forward with the refounding of the mysteries because her will was dedicated to Rudolf Steiner.
Mm.
Now, that's an awful lot not to be jealous about if you are Marie Steiner. Both of them, though, in their own right, revolve together in a triptych. They're always together, these three. And it's because of the working out of the karma. He did say of Ida Wegman, because of her incarnation as Alexander the Great, that when she reincarnated again, there would be no longer any karma between her and Rudolf Steiner. And you should look toward the horizon in the present, that the two of them are probably coming onto the plane of history in the not too distant future. Because in
you mean Ita?
Yes.
You mean Ita and Rudolf Steiner?
Yes, we're only years away from the 100 year anniversary of the Christmas Conference, 2023. That means the Christ Impulse, the 33 and a third year rhythm, will have worked three times. And if you look at what's going on around you, you can see, like, humanity in the West, especially America, as like being pressed, like grapes in a wine pressed, in a confrontation with evil. And the world that's out there is not the world that I, in my imagination, live into. I want to have anthroposophical thoughts occupy my thought life in the majority of the times. So I just want to share that with you, a little story for you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Here's anybody else in the queue there?
Not right now. So if you have a question or you want to share anything about the relevance or ear, what am I trying to say?
anything that's relevant.
Anything that, whether you feel it's relevant or ear.
Or no.
Not relevant. We would love to hear from you, so press *6 on your telephone keypad, and we'd be happy to open your line. And if everybody's getting tired and have had enough, we can also close the call, but I'm going to give it a minute or so and just...
How about Carol? I like to hear the ensouled spirit's voice.
I don't know what her number is, so she'll have to...
What would she have to do?
She would have to press *6.
Carol, are you on the line yet? And did Carol come on the line tonight?
I don't know, because I can't see names. I can only see phone numbers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we've had a few people just dropped off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so... I don't know, maybe we'll close the call now. And I just want to thank everybody for coming and for being here. It really enriches us to be able to share these thoughts. Oh, here we have somebody else. Hold on here. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, it's Elizabeth calling. This is my comment. Jeez, Alaya. Like, wow, that's huge. It's a lot.
Say that again, Elizabeth. What was a lot?
I'm just
that last story?
Comment. After I heard you say that, I was like, jeez.
Well, if you work with your etheric body and do memory exercises, you can have an infinite amount of imaginations in your inner life.
Well, who needs it when I have you on the phone?
Well, thank you. But I'm only going to want to stimulate your inner life and have you do memory exercises, too.
You're my Greek cliff note.
Yeah, well, you understand now why Tamara and I love to hang out.
Yeah.
I mean, I set up her curriculum for her. She asked me, what should I read? Where do I start? And, my God, I have to give her, like, 5 or 8 books at a time.
I believe it.
She was so hungry.
She was really hungry. She said to me, nobody would tell me anything. I said, that's because they're all old soul types. I said, I'm not an old soul type. What do you want to know?
Like, so what's your incarnations then?
What?
Do you know what your incarnations are? Have you figured that out? I mean, obviously, you were there.
I really have an inner experience that I was there at the Christmas conference. I don't really have any inner sense of anything in the past other than when I read, let's say, these triptych lectures that I've introduced here. I listen very intently to what Rudolf Steiner is sharing in there. And I love history, but I really, you know, I kind of lay it out on a timeline in the sense that I know that we incarnate about every 800 years. So
right.
I know I was in a female body back in the Middle Ages. I would say that.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely was in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely in Egypt. In Egypt, those are, you know, they're major incarnations. But I had this privilege early on in my personal life of finding anthroposophy when I'm like 21 years old.
This life.
That's pretty early.
Mm.
And it's like 1970. And I had 8 years there in front of me where I didn't work. But I had this little apartment and I would just read and read and read. I love to read. And then I realized that there's a kind of continuity here from 1901 to 1925. And once I kind of discovered that, I went back and I tried to fill in. You know, what did he lecture on in 1901? What's in 1902? What's in 1903? I didn't even know there was an Anthroposophical Society because I came upon, you know, Rudolf Steiner books on my own, asking about them in a bookstore. It was years before I ever met another anthroposophist. And I was actually sponsored through the mail by Henry Barnes. And he mentioned me in one of the newsletters in 1971. He said that anthroposophists were springing up like weeds in Minnesota. So he called me a weed. He referred to me as a weed.
The new variety of weed, huh?
Yeah, it's a new variety. It's an heirloom variety. Yeah.
Well, was it Carol last week that said that the Holy Nights we receive a lot of substance? And I have to say this call, as well as the others, has an abundance, a cornucopia of abundance of substance, of food thoughts for us to digest on. So thank you very much for your offering and your all the hard work you've put in, all the diligence, all the seed around this kind of contribution to, you know, for those of us whose time was not able to be spent, and that's very beneficial. Like I said, you're giving me a cliff note.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on the calls.
I loved what you said about Viviana, the rapture there. I thought that was very well stated. I felt the same way. And Viviana, I very much look forward. I hope that you'll do the calls in January because you've always, through the years, shared your love for Epiphany. And I was like, oh, I so would love to hear
what lives in your heart around Epiphany. I would really love to tap into that too. So anyway, thanks putting in that desire.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing, and thanks for your comments, Elizabeth. And it's always great to hear your joyous spirit coming through the ether waves. I'd love to meet you sometime.
And we will have a great long winter's nap tonight, won't we all, with sugar plums dancing in our head from all that's been shared.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Okay, we have one more person who stepped up. I'm going to open your line now. Go ahead.
Maybe it's me. This is Carol? Or is there someone else? Oh, can
That's
you hear
Carol.
Me?
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, can you hear me? I've got speaker on right now. Can you hear
Pretty
me
good.
Okay?
Yeah, it's not as full-bodied as whatever you were doing when it's not speaker.
Okay, I'll here.
Okay, that's better.
Oh, that's like you just jumped through the phone onto my desk.
Okay. My husband's in the background. He'll have to get my report of this. So I just wanted to thank both of you for doing this this gift giving to us. And what we are going to do is invite our community to come on Sunday afternoon. So this has been very helpful because we've all just been doing our Holy Night's work in our own individual way. And so the question that we will bring to everyone is, you know, what is happening and their envisioning of the coming year. And I like the idea, I know true, that each individual needs to share deeply from their own heart and experience, and then if there seems to be, you know, these natural ways in which we can do something together or support each other, you know, it'll be much better than, sometimes, you know, if you get excited about something, you try to enlist other people to join you, and I know that it needs to come from each individual. So thank you for just giving us that extra inspiration. So we will we'll carry on here in Minnesota.
All right. Well, let us know how it goes. We'd love to stay posted about that. And all the best for your meeting.
Thank you.
So, Carol, you're going to get a group on. Is it the Money Unveiled call this Sunday, or are you referring to our Monday call on?
No, she's saying she's having a meeting in her community there. They're hosting, her and her husband.
Yes.
And so they're going to share their initiative. They're going to share their visions with one another.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice. Yes.
Yeah, and she was just thanking us for the inspiration for and the support for what they want to bring in their meeting. So,
oh, great. Yeah, that's nice.
Yes, it really is. And of course, you know, I will bring something from the inspiration from the Money Unveiled. There's been so much going on. So thank you for all of it. It's all very, very nurturing and inspiring.
Well, you're welcome.
Yes.
So do you want to share a little bit about our own biography work, our own destiny? Discovery work?
Sure. just for a minute, and then we'll have our closing verse.
Yeah.
So I just want to let everybody know that sometimes, you know, it's not always easy to really get to the core and the heart of what it is that you're here to do and what you intuit is your path and purpose. And sometimes it is, like Victoria was saying, you know, following the breadcrumbs, like you do something and you offer it up, you create your deeds and you gain some inspiration. But for those of you that are searching for that and would love some support and some clarity for really crystallizing your intentions and your vision, or maybe you need help with form or process or next steps or anything like that. Elia and I are going to offer, we'll be offering mid-January, free destiny discovery conversations, a free destiny discovery conversation on a first-come, first-serve basis. And
consultation.
Yeah, just, yeah, conversation, consultation to see what your longing is and what it is that you might need help with or clarifying with. And we'll be giving this, the group of people that's registered for these calls, the first opportunity. So that's something that you can think about between now and then. I'm guessing we'll open up sometime mid to late January. I'm not sure exactly what date, but we'll let everybody know, and then we'll take appointments from there. So with that, I think, Elia, would you like to share the closing? We just have one more Holy Nights Visioning conversation before the Holy Nights are over on January 4th in a week. And, yeah, as Elizabeth alluded to, we'll be focusing on the Spirit of Epiphany and Steiner's lecture series, Rosicrucianism and Modern Initiation. So we look forward to having you join us then if you feel inclined. And, Elia, would you do the closing verse then?
Yes. At the turning point of time, the spirit light of the world entered the stream of earthly being. The dark night concluded its rule. Day radiant light poured into the hearts of human souls. Light that gives warmth to simple shepherds' hearts. Light that enlightens the wise heads of kings. O light divine, O Son of Christ, warm thou our hearts, enlighten thou our heads, that good may become from forces founded in the heart and from our heads directed with purpose filled will.
Okay, I'm going to unmute everybody. There's just a few of us left. There we go. I just want to say good night, everyone, and I wish you a blessed journey into the new year as you cross the threshold, and thank you for being here.
And thank
thanks, everyone. See you next year.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
All right, good night.
Good night. Night.